You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Have you ever wondered who the Mary was from Bloody Mary? If the Loch Ness Monster was real, or if Ouija boards actually worked? On each episode of the family-friendly Unspookable, we look at the histories and mysteries behind your favorite scary stories, myths, and urban legends to get the real stories behind the scares. Want to solve your next mystery? Find and follow Unspookable now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Calm Cove podcast can help you sleep deeply all night long. Calm Cove has deeply relaxing meditation music and ambient sounds, like ocean waves and crackling fires. All of our episodes are designed to help you relax and to fall asleep fast. Calm Cove is brought to you by the team behind Sleep Cove, the sleep podcast that consists of spoken word hypnosis, meditation, and stories. So if you want to listen to a beautiful soundscape tonight, search for Calm Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and see how we're helping millions of people relax and go to sleep every night.
Feel like who Art Ed?
We're trying to slice it.
Who Art Ed?
Mr. Wood Art Ed me.
Good. Either way, it's ambiguous. It works on so many levels.
I know.
That's off to a great start.
Welcome to Who Arted, where we explore visual arts in an audio medium. I'm your host, Kyle Wood, and joining me today, I have Goldie Robinson.
Hello.
An art teacher out of Georgia who is just doing all of the things. You teach all of the grade levels. I do not understand how you can possibly make that work.
Yes, I do. Well, of course I do, because I'm magic, you know.
I wish I had thought magic. Makes perfect sense.
Yes. That's so, the artist's secret, that we're magic.
You will have to teach me your ways. That's why I have failed at everything. I forgot the magic. Seriously, thank you very much for finding time to join me in your schedule. And I love that you brought a different type of artist, an artist I have not covered from a category of art I really haven't covered. We're talking today about Alexander McQueen, the fashion designer.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I just get so excited when I hear his name. I just can't hold it in. I'm like, woo!
Now, those who know me know that fashion is not exactly my strong suit. I dress in jeans and a hoodie every chance that I get.
That's still fashion, Kyle. That's still fashion.
Yes, it is fashion. It's just bad fashion. But I do look forward to learning a little bit more about the high fashion world. So starting off with a little bit of background and context, as I always like to do, Alexander McQueen is not even his given name at birth. It's Lee Alexander McQueen.
That's right.
He was born March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, 1969
what?
In London. He was the youngest of six children, and as I said, he was born Lee Alexander McQueen. Some say he actually went by Alexander professionally, just because early on he's struggling financially, and by using his middle name professionally, he could still claim unemployment benefits under his first name. Seems a little dodgy to me. I don't know that the people in the unemployment office would suggest that.
Well, you know, you do what you got to do. I mean, and his friends called him Lee.
Yes, his friends did call him Lee, but professionally he was known as Alexander.
Yeah.
His father was a taxi driver. His mother taught social sciences. So he's coming from sort of that working middle class background. And he was interested in clothing from a young age. And I guess as a kid, he started making dresses for his sisters. He left school at just 16, and he started taking a course at Newham College studying tailoring, because as I said, from the get-go, he knew that's what he wanted to be doing. He started apprenticing at Anderson Shepherd, Anderson and Shepherd's is like they're tailors in sort of a posh area of London known as Savile Row. Savile. I can't even pronounce Savile. English.
I think it's Savile.
I one day I will go through an entire episode pronouncing things correctly, but that day is not today.
We don't need to.
Like I said, sort of a posh area. He's doing an apprenticeship in tailoring, and then he gets a job as a pattern cutter. He's basically doing the standard, like, work your way up through the industry. You know, he's paying his dues, doing the grunt work, but doing it extremely well. So he had he kind of gained a reputation for his ability to make finely tailored and structured outfits. When he was 21, I absolutely love this story because to me, it so much encapsulates like just the mindset of an artist and a young person. He's 21 years old. Remember, he had left school at like 16. He applies to be a pattern cutting mentor at Central St. Martin's College of Art and Design. So, like, he would be the same age as the students he wants to mentor, but he thinks he can do the job. And he wasn't entirely wrong. I mean, they looked at his portfolio and they said, clearly we can't have you teaching this. But your portfolio is so strong, we want you to come to the master's program. And so he did. He studied. He got his MA in 1992. And pretty much after that, like, he goes into the fashion world and he's a pretty quick success from what I understand. You know, his dramatic flair was eye-catching from the beginning. He started off with, like, Jack the Ripper stalks his victims, which, I don't know, darker than I like to go.
He loved dark.
He did love dark and dramatic.
It's storytelling. It's story. You know, he definitely, he built a narrative visually. He definitely, he was into incorporating pieces of his personal history in his work. And he was so, I mean, just to go back to what you were saying about, you know, all of his education and his apprenticeship, he was so good at what he was doing. He was such an amazing tailor that he just impressed everybody so much. And he really became an expert at the tailoring of the jacket and the pants and all this menswear. And then from there, he was able to, I know we're not up to this part yet, but when he built his own voice and fashion and his own style, he kind of has license to do that because he is such an expert. And that's something that I always tell my students that, you know, for example, with artists like Picasso or Van Gogh, they all had a very similar story, learning how to master their craft. And then they became innovators, you know, later on in their 20s, 30s and up. And so I always try to tell my students, you know, we have to learn the rules before we can break them, right? So this is kind of the period of McQueen's life where he is learning the rules and then he's going to break them.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because when we think about a theme like Jack the Ripper stalks his victims, I'm imagining a lot of deconstructed, torn things.
Right, like raw hem.
You know, because when I think about that historical narrative, like, it's not a clean look, but he was a very fine tailor. So like you say, he kind of learned how to structure things and then learned how to deviate from that. And also when I'm thinking through that, like, lens of history, what was happening culturally in the early to mid 1990s, that was the grunge movement. That was the time when society, for whatever reason, Gen X just wanted to be miserable. You know, they paid a lot of money for stuff that looked like it was fished out of a dumpster.
Well, it wasn't for whatever reason. It was in response to other things. But yes, it definitely coincided with, I mean, that's what great art does, right? It reflects what's happening in the culture at the time. So he was really on the cutting edge. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't like, he was with the people. He was going out, you know, to clubs and to concerts and hanging out with friends. And he was very much just in tune with popular culture, with attitudes of the time. And, you know, I think it was important to him to design for his generation. And that 1990s being that grunge era. So, you know, his runway shows, the catwalk was always very theatrical, very dramatic. And it's kind of interesting you mentioned grunge, because when I think of grunge and fashion, I think of flannel, I think of plaid. And McQueen didn't work with like a plaid, like flannel, but he was famous for incorporating tartan or tartan. I'm Southern, so I say it tartan. but it's because he had Scottish roots.
I think that's a good connection because, like you say, he was tapping into not only sort of the spirit of the 90s and what was happening culturally, you know, in terms of popular culture, with the sort of deconstructed raw aesthetic that we saw there. But he was also tapping into his own sort of personal cultural background with the traditional tartan. I like your pronunciation. But like those patterns and those elements that give it a little bit of a personal connection. I think part of what made him successful as an artist was he realized what other people were doing and what other people, what the audience wanted, but he also put himself into there and his own personal narrative and his own background and his own cultural heritage. And I think that's where people really respond, is when you tap into something, but with an authentic lens and a personal connection so that it doesn't feel like a cheap marketing stunt.
Yes, that's the word you said right there, connection. It's when you feel like you can connect with something, and, you know, fashion being something that, you know, is often dismissed as, you know, maybe being frivolous or not being such a legitimate part of the arts, but it is. It's the applied arts. And when you feel like you can connect with the designer, with the artist, it gives it significance to you, and you remember it. It sticks with you. And it's interesting because I wasn't even a fashion major or anything. I was an illustration major. But, you know, not to brag, but I did take 10 credit hours at the Fashion Institute of Technology in Manhattan. So I was, let's just say I was learning in a building where fashion was happening. I wasn't doing any designing myself. But I would say that Alexander McQueen has always stood out for me. He always just stuck with me. As soon as I saw his work, I just immediately connected with it. Because he really had that, he has that special something.
As you were talking about his work, you know, from 2010, I'm looking here at the piece that you sent me first, the Jellyfish Ensemble. This was from his Plato's Atlantis Spring-Summer Collection.
Do you find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Sleep Cove podcast can help you. Hi, I'm Christopher Fitton, the voice and clinical hypnotherapist behind Sleep Cove. Sleep Cove features sleep hypnosis, meditations, and bedtime stories, all designed to help those of you who struggle at night to achieve a restful and peaceful night's sleep. Search for Sleep Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and see why Sleep Cove helps millions of people sleep deeply all night long.
Right off the bat, obviously, we see these gorgeous blues, and it's almost iridescent.
Okay, hold on a second. I need to ask you something.
Yeah.
Did it knock you out of your seat when you first saw it? Did you have to hold on to your socks because it just blew your socks off? Because that's how I feel about this piece.
Okay, so right off the bat, I would say I was pleasantly surprised because I generally look at avant-garde fashion and think I tend to look at things through a little bit of a utilitarian lens. And I think like, OK, is this functional? Would this be comfortable, or is this aesthetically pleasing? Is this nice to look at? I try to think about like what function is this hitting? And I would say this one, while I personally could not pull it off, I think it looks nice, and it doesn't look unbearable to wear the way that some fashion
I agree.
I look at, and I feel bad for the model to such an extent that I can't appreciate anything else, because there's this poor human being who's trapped in there and trying not to breathe because, you know, everything's going to be poking and falling off and whatever. I thought it was very strong. The shoes look unsettling to me. I don't know how anyone could walk in that.
Wait, should we get to the shoes first or last? Because I feel like the shoes are like the centerpiece.
I feel like we can start wherever you want. I want to hear your read on it to start. What are you seeing? Why did you pick this one? What's jumping out at you?
Where to start? Kyle, I mean, I don't even know where to start on this. It's like, I feel like I'm like a sports announcer right now. I need to do a play-by-play on this ensemble. Let's start with the shoes, okay? The shoes in this ensemble are referred to as armadillo boots. This design was and always will be yesterday, today, tomorrow, and forever after. This is a McQueen signature. This sculptural, let me describe it, because I know this is an audio medium. Okay, so let me do my best here. Imagine a stiletto shoe, okay? And then, okay, imagine that like at the ankle, instead of the shoe following the line of the arch of the foot, it like curves outward into like a crab's claw kind of look.
I love that you describe that as like just the height of fashion, and I'm looking at that as just like that feels torturous. I could not imagine wearing something like that.
It's so good. It's genius. I'll tell you what.
It's this biomorphic shape. It looks like something like Juan Miró would have designed in a painting, not for a human being to try to shove their foot into.
You know what it reminded me of? Do you know the sculptor Constantine Brancusi?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I can see that.
It reminds me of like a right, like the lines. And in college, I was really into Brancusi sculptures. And then in hindsight, I'm like, maybe that's why I like those armadillo boots so much, because they have a very similar feel.
It's almost like a ballerina on her toes all the time.
Yes, exactly. It's actually, there's like a secret to these shoes because. I mean, I hope everyone's going to Google them, but it's actually like a modified ballet flat. I don't know all the engineering behind these boots, but I did find on YouTube, there are some DIYs of how to make them. I'm not interested in making them, as I'm pretty sure I'll break my ankle if I try to wear them. Listen, if someone approached me with a pair of armadillo boots and said, would you try these on? The answer is absolutely, I would. I would try them on. I would just like trot around my house. I would just do the dishes in them. I would just make dinner in them. And I would feel amazing. And, I mean, this is McQueen. He wants women to feel amazing, to feel powerful, to feel like at once feminine, but also just like a force to be reckoned with. And I feel like this ensemble is so powerful. It's so visually impactful. You see this image of this. Of course, the model is statuesque. They're like 7 feet tall. So I'm imagine it on my 5'4" body, like which I love to imagine myself wearing it. I'm just like in it, you know. It's a different take. However, you know, it's very engaging somehow, this ensemble, this outfit. It's like you see it's a dress on top with leggings, and then you've got these armadillo boots on the bottom. The dress on top has these three-quarter length sleeves and a high neck, and the neck comes, it's like a bit above the collarbone. It's not quite a turtleneck. It's completely covered in iridescent paillettes. Speaking of pronunciation, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Paillettes, we don't know. It's sequins. Okay, it's iridescent sequins covered in these, which you know were like hand-stitched with love. And it's just so, they're gorgeous. So you've got these sleeves that then kind of bell out in this like voluminous silhouette that reminds you of a jellyfish. And then you've got this skirt that comes out again into like just volume. It's almost like in like a bubble shape. It's like a bubble skirt, is what they used to call them. I don't know if it's still called that. Also just covered in paillettes. And then the leggings actually have in like within the sequins, he's used this like variation in the shades of the sequins to create this look of like tendrils, like how a jellyfish has tendrils. And this outfit is just, it's bananas. It's so good. And the cool, like, pop culture story behind it is that it was actually given to Lady Gaga to wear for the Bad Romance video by Alexander McQueen as a thank you, because Lady Gaga gave the single Bad Romance to Alexander McQueen to play during the Plato's Atlantis show, actually as during the finale. And he just loved her so much and saw her as such a muse and was so grateful for the song. He sent her a box just full of clothes from that show, which, I mean, is such a dream. I can't even imagine getting something like that in the mail. And then she wore the full jellyfish ensemble in the Bad Romance video. And so they close up a lot. They do a lot of close-ups on the armadillo boots. And that's actually when I first saw them from that music video. And I wasn't even so familiar with McQueen at that time. And that's what actually kind of, I mean, I knew about him, of course, but that I was just like, he's over the edge genius, like on another level of innovation. I can't put my finger on it, but I think there's something about a designer, an artist, like when you can't get them out of your head, like when you're just kind of blown away and you're like, I understand that I will never understand you. And yeah. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. And there are a lot of things that you said there that I think are really interesting. One, the connection to the iridescent sequins and everything like that, it creates this texture almost like fish scales. And as I look at the detail shot of those armadillo boots and stuff, it almost takes on the silhouette of like a mermaid's tail or something like that coming down from like the calf down to the bottom of the shoe. Like the shoe almost becomes, as I said before, a biomorphic shape. It's almost like a fish tail or something like that. And you talked about her seeming sort of feminine, but also powerful. And I think that's, I mean, I hate the idea that there's like any sort of perceived contradiction between those two tones, but let's face it, culturally for a long time, there has been that perceived contradiction. And I think what makes her seem strong and feminine and soft all simultaneously is the fact that the dress has this flow to it. Like it has this movement almost like water. It's shape shifting the way that a jelly would be, you know? And simultaneously the boot has this structure to it, and it's such a heavy shape at the bottom there that it to me, looks confining. But at the same time, I cannot help but imagine, like, you're almost forced to sort of stomp through the world in that shoe. Like, there just seems to be this weight visually at the bottom that is going to make each step a little bit stronger and more purposeful and create that stature and that poise that is required, yes, to pull it off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think
I didn't even think of that. That is absolutely true.
Yeah. And I think that's what creates the interesting mystique here, is there's this play with almost seemingly contradictory things, but he gets it unified. He gets it to all work together through the commonality of the sequins and the iridescent colors and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. Like, he ties some elements throughout, but then changes other things, you know, with the contrast between the structure of the shoe and the flow of the dress, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great juxtaposition, but amazing contrast there for sure. Gosh, he's just such a, yeah, like, doing the equivalent of, like, acrobatics in the art world, basically, to just, exactly like you said, creating unity within this outfit. It's not easy. He's doing insane, incredible things.
The other thing that I'm struck by, as somebody who's not had any real training in fashion or anything like that, like, I'm not personally invested in it beyond having watched Project Runway 10 years ago.
So good. Such a good show.
But, like,
the first couple seasons.
As somebody who is not really into that world and into that scene, as I look at this piece, it's accessible to me. And I like that there's that entry point where I don't need to do a lot of research to see and appreciate, like, just visually right from the start, like, okay, there's a nice silhouette and the color scheme looks good and the shapes are interesting and there's a nice flow, it's workable, it actually seems like it's not too far from ready to wear, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's clearly meant to be almost a, you know, sculpted object or something like that. I mean, it's not made to go in a variety of sizes and in different contexts. I mean, you would look kind of ridiculous wearing that to the grocery store, but
I mean, I wouldn't, but I mean, maybe someone else,
you know,
I would wear it.
Wear what makes you feel good. I wouldn't feel good in this outfit. But you know, It looks, like I said, it's accessible to me from the start. I can understand the ideas. I can immediately visually see the connection to Atlantis and jellyfish and all of that sort of stuff that he's referencing in the collection. And so I like that it makes sense from the start. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I tell you what else I really like about it as an art teacher? And I don't know if you appreciate this also, but just the simplicity of it being about an animal. Like, art projects that are about animals are always pretty much a hit in the art room, I think, with kids and adolescents. It's like, when you can make art that is about animals or, you know, something about nature, it's so universal. And I just find that kind of subject matter is really good at kind of engaging everybody. You know, we all live on planet Earth and nature. So, yeah, it's something we can all kind of, I mean, everybody loves animals. Everyone loves a jellyfish, you know?
Well, I love it or not, everybody has some connection, some thoughts, some entry point there. Like you said, it's universal. Yeah. And I think universality is a good theme to hit on. I tend not to like things that are overly esoteric. Like, I don't think I would like this as much if it were titled something about Poseidon and, you know, like, I just, as I said, somebody who is not of that that world and doesn't know a ton about fashion, I like that he gives us an easy entry point and a way to to understand it, even if we don't get too deep into the weeds on it.
Yeah, 100.
And I'm wrapping it up. I want just a 3-point rating scale. And where should this hang? The Louvre? Is this something to look at? The lab? Is this something to learn from? Or the Louvre? British for the bathroom.
Yeah,
there's the Louvre joke in there somewhere.
Oh, that's terrible.
I'll take option 4, my closet.
I always love when people are comfortable to break the format.
Listen, I learned the format and I'm going to break the rules, okay? No, I'm just kidding. I think this is hands down 100% a piece that belongs in the in the lab. I think this is a lab piece. Do you agree or disagree? I'm trying to guess from your face. I can't tell.
Nobody can tell from my face. I'm sorry you have to see my
face.
I would actually put this in the museum. To me, this is a museum piece because of the fact that, like, I recognize finely crafted stuff, and innovation in the medium and like high quality there. I think there's a conceptual bent to it that works, and I think it works.
Sorry,
I think it works visually. No, I think it works on multiple different levels, and to me that's kind of what the museum is for. It's that piece that you can know nothing about but still see and appreciate and take something from, and you can study and know a ton and find deeper levels of meaning and connection to it. And I feel like this is one that kind of ticks all the boxes, at least from my perspective. I feel like it's a really strong piece, and I feel like I'm probably in good company because I think this is at the Met, right? I mean,
I don't know if it still is. I know it was.
It's been in the museums.
You really just kind of changed my mind a little bit. Now I'm questioning my whole stand on this. I kind of agree with you. I mean, at first I was thinking lab because I was like, well, it's the applied arts. It's clothing. Clothing is meant to be worn, and I would love to wear it. So this is like lab all day. But no, now that you said that, I'm like, you know, it kind of is. I mean, it really is a sculpture. Okay, so here's what I love about fashion. And also any sculpture is that there could be more than one, right? So I'm like, I would like to have my version of Jellyfish Ensemble, okay? And that I could like experience and touch and feel and wear and all the things. But also, I would like for it to be admired in the Louvre at the same time. Gosh, it's hard. It's hard because clothes are meant to be worn. But at the same time, that's a toughie. But I'm going to stick with lab because I really feel strongly that we should be wearing our clothes, and there's a lot of joy to be had in clothing.
Fair enough. And it's fine to say it's cross-categorical too. But I do have to say thank you so much for taking the time and helping me to learn about an artist and really an art form that I have long been ignorant about. So thank you very much. Goldie Robinson, really appreciate your taking the time.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on your awesome show. Gosh, it was really fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes this week's episode of Who Arted. If you found this tolerable, please like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. You can find images of the work being discussed this week and every week in the show notes on Twitter at WoodArtEd and on the website whoartedpodcast.com. Podcast done.